I'm Dave Catania from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I am co-presenting with Matt Matheny. We basically both did some projects. One was on the main stem eel, and the other was the one that CDFW ran in partnership with Trout Unlimited, and Matt Matheny with Caltrout ran the South Fork eel. So we'll give a brief overview of the projects, a little bit of my results, and then Matt will go into his results. Bit of discussion. So sonar technology on the Eel River. So like I said, with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife in partnership with Trout Unlimited, and as well as California Trout in partnership with the CCC, California Conservation Corps, we've basically explored this past year of using sonar technology to enumerate the 2018 and 2019 spawning run of Chinook, Coho, Salmon, and Steelhead Trout on both the main stem eel and the South Fork eel. We used the Sound Metrics dual frequency identification sonar, did some cameras. They were deployed at two sites in the watershed, which collectively provides the salmon escapement data for a large portion of the watershed. Basically, we're only missing the main component that we're missing is the Van Dusen watershed, which is below where these two cameras were. Didsen technology has been around since the 60s, but it's been much improved in the last 10 years, I'd say. So it's been used in Alaska for their commercial fisheries, the technology is more recent in California. Matt Matheny was one of the pioneers with his doing his master's thesis on Redwood Creek in 2011.
Started in 2009.
And so now this technology is employed throughout the state, but this was a pilot year for the Eel River. So our plan is for a two-year study. I believe Caltrout is going to try and do that as well. And so we're looking at the 2018-19 season and then next year as well. This year we ran completely separate projects. Hopefully next year, because we wanted to get a handle on our projects the first time we were doing this. Next year hopefully we'll be able to collaborate a little bit more. We certainly talked and discussed obviously what was going on and problems and things that we're running into. So we were in constant communication, but next year we might be able to try and coordinate field crews more in order to save limited funds. So the studies began in mid to late November and counted Chinook, fall Chinook and coho salmon and steelhead trout until April of 2019. That was ours ended on the main stem in mid-February of 2019, whereas Caltrout has kind of continued to go through just up to basically this past week of looking at keeping the camera in here and there. Our project's intended to collect information 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, but that was greatly dependent on rainfall patterns and river flows. So the main stem eel river project, which was our project, CDFW, CDFW provided oversight and staffing as well as equipment and additional funding for implementation of the project. Trout Unlimited partnered with CDFW and provided consultation and additional equipment and purchasing through its donors. The South Fork Eel River Project, Caltrout Project, was funded by a grant with CDFW's Fisheries Restoration Grant, specifically through the Steelhead Program.
Yes.
And Caltrout provided oversight and a crew lead, and they partnered with California Conservation Corps for field staff, vehicles, and office space for data review. Sonar cameras and associated sonar equipment was provided by CDFW Fisheries Branch. So this is the location of the pointer in the middle?
Yeah.
Of the two Didsons, basically Fortuna's down here. The two Didsons were right here. Basically, so at the very lower end of each system, you can see there's a lot of watershed area above these Didsons. And we were capturing basically all the run in these systems. There's no significant tributaries below where our cameras were located. And I'll be talking about the Van Arsdale Fish Station, which is all the way up here on the main stem later, but just so for some perspective. This was my camera. This is on the main stem Mill River. See, it's right here. Basically, this is Dryerville Loop Road. We took a float down the Eel River February 2018, looking for potential locations. We were pretty limited locations on the Eel River just because there's not a whole lot of access besides this Dryerville Loop Road. It goes along the lower 8 miles and then the Eel River separates. So we were limited to that. And with that, there's just even not many areas to drive down to the river. But this was on HRC land. We found a spot that it was basically, there's a large pool right above it, but then it goes into a run ripple situation. And so it was a perfect location for fish. Once they passed the camera, generally they didn't move back down. We saw very little, there's not a pool for them to mill. So they basically were committed to going past the camera. And the South Fork camera was the same kind of situation where it was in a run, and once they decided to go past the camera, they generally weren't going to mill and be committed to moving upstream. This is our site on the main stem Eel River. This is at summer, like when we were out there. We did a dive to like to see what if there was any fish in here, and basically what the bottom looked like. And this is at really low flows. Basically, this is like around 70 CFS, I believe, 265. Our camera, feature camera location was right there. And so we did a cross section at this site to basically make sure what the stream bottom looked like, that it was uniform, there was no large boulder sticking out that would basically impede the sonar camera, the image. Caltrap did something similar to their site as well. Here's the sonar equipment. This is the camera, the top box that connects the cable to the laptop, and then some various other cables. So we use the long range camera, which is able to shoot out to 80 meters. Basically, you have the option of either shooting 40 or 80 meters out, but there's nothing in between those two. Like I said, there's a H-brace that we use to put the box where the camera goes in, and it's locked. I'm not sure what picture of that. So this is our setup. Both of our sites were located on large river bars in remote locations where we didn't have access to power. Field equipment consists of our Ditson camera, our lockbox, camera stand, off-grid power source, laptop, and external hard drives. This right down here is the box in which the camera securely fits in. It's a tough metal box. And there's a stand, and then you put it out in the river. We used a fence here to make sure that the fish didn't go around it. It went in front of the camera. Caltrap did something similar. This, in our project, TU purchased a cargo trailer and outfitted it for us. This was definitely with Charlie's help. We had solar panels on top here, and then solar batteries stored inside in order to give us supply our power. Caltrout used 8 marine batteries that they had to change out basically every day, which is a pretty intensive process.
Wow.
That's strong.
Yeah. And there it was housed in a big cargo box, which was locked into the ground basically. Like I said, our cameras operated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, beginning with the onset of the rain. We actually got ours in a little bit before the rain came, so November 15th was when we started recording 24/7. Caltrout was just a little bit later. Cameras basically had to be almost adjusted daily, just because you either had to move it a little bit further out if flows were receding, or most of the time way back as flows rise. So they are intensive as far as the amount of care and maintenance they take as far as moving the cameras. But it's good to also just have your presence out there to see what's going on and make sure the cameras are still there, and obviously there's expensive cameras.
But I think it's worth it for the information you're gathering, Dave.
And it's just like a quality control to make sure basically that the camera is adjusted right. You're always basically, when you go out there, you're looking at the image quality and that the that you're capturing basically from the top of the column to the bottom of the column of the water. So this is an image of what we're looking at. Like this was when I was shooting at 40 meters. Here's a fish right here. So as you can see, like because it's recording 24/7, that's a lot of data to potentially try and review. So basically what we had to do is review the first 20 minutes on every hour, and then that count is expanded to get a daily count and then an overall count. From this image, you can see that you can't really tell what kind of fish it is. So some mono species cannot be determined by the sonar image. We had to base it more on run timing, like in the main stem eel. You pretty much know that it's mostly Chinook coming up at the beginning, with a few mixing of steelhook from November to the end of December. And then with the South Fork eel, it's a little bit different since they have a pulse of Chinook coming in from early November until, you know, they run also till the end of December, but then you have Chinook starting in mid-December, and then steelhook typically come in beginning of January, late December.
Dave, I think you're at about half of the total.
Okay.
So you're probably going into data, showing us the data soon, and then over to Matt.
This is basically what I was just talking about. First significant rains occurred later, just like Eric was saying. Usually they happen in early November. We should have seen the pulse then, but because of rains not occurring until late November is really the first pulse of fish that came in. It was a huge pulse, and it was most likely because that was a combination. It probably should have been several earlier pulses, but they pretty much were all stacked up. In the lower river, there was some jacks that were able to get by before this large rain event that we saw on the camera, but most of the adults did not get by until this first significant rain event that occurred in late November. Then we just saw really like muted, smaller pulses of Chinook in the months of December. That was mostly the case for, I think, Caltrout as well, but they had a little bit better numbers. And like I said, for the most part, the Chinook run ceased at the end of December. We based that on what fish were being seen at the Van Arsdale Fish Station on the main stem. Like basically, Scott Harris stopped seeing Chinook, I think, going in late December. Also, our spawner surveys that were going on in the South Fork eel didn't see any new Chinook into January. This is a graph of the main stem eel showing our numbers. Basically, you see this is that huge pulse where we had, expanded wise over 1,000 fish with this big, I think it was 1,800 fish almost that moved in here. And then it was just smaller pulses through the December. And then the yellow is when we start getting steelhead coming in. And then there's these little circles are where the camera was not in, and that was mostly related to flow. It was just above 9,000 CFS, it was hard to have the camera in at our site. It was just too much of a flow. So our total number of Chinook that we estimated was 3,844, and that was both jacks and adults. A little bit more adults than jacks, but we couldn't completely break down that number because when you're shooting at 80 meters, it's too difficult to measure fish. And then we had to take our camera out basically mid-February because the flow was just consistently way too high after that. Just real briefly, this was like 3,500. This was like that right after that first rain. This was a nice flow to basically see fish in the camera. This is when that big pulse came in. And this is just showing like typically what it was like from January on and how it's kind of difficult that those high flows to capture the steelhead on a lower river. Christmas Day, the flows were a lot higher than expected, and so we were lucky our trailer actually didn't get washed away. And this is at 30,000, and typically the camera would have been right here, and so you can see like these really high flows, you just can't have them. Camera in the river. I'll let Matt go into this.
Thank you, Dave. So Dave kind of covered most of the intro, so I can just kind of go into some of my results. And I'll just jump right into it. This is the counts from the first part of the season. Here's almost 1,000 fish on the very first little rain, and we had the camera in the morning that storm came through, and all morning the flows were flat, nothing came in, and as soon as it rose like an inch or two, they just started flooding in, and wow. And we got that big first pulse. And like we've kind of been speculating, if there was a rain further on, maybe that pulse wouldn't have been so big. And also note that we did see a flurry of smaller fish on the kind of beginning of the season, and that kind of matches up with you saying that some jacks came in early, and also Eric, and didn't see that number or proportion of smaller fish later on in the season, so it does seem like some half-pounders and jacks came in on the first rains. And like Dave said, most of our Chinook came in before the Christmas Day storm, so we had kind of Chinook coming in all through here, and then this a big peak, and then Steelhead and Coho coming in after that. I got a few more recordable days than Dave did. The South Fork being a slightly smaller watershed, I was able to record a lot of times to around 4,000 or 5,000 CFS, and just more days in general in the water, so it's something to consider in when we're thinking about where we want to use this technology. We can go small and do really well on a little creek and get everything, but as we get bigger and bigger, maybe there's a point where we're biting off more than we can chew. Here's the second half of the season from January all the way through April, and you'll see I've got the same scale on flow, but this is a much lower scale for number of fish, so we didn't get passage days over 150 fish a day, which still added up to quite a bit. I had 3,800 fish on that first slide, which is almost exactly what Dave got for Chinook salmon, 3,844. I've got 4,000 fish on this slide through all these numbers, and what one thing that I see, and maybe you don't see it, but I noticed that the highest counts seem to be on the falling limb of a hydrograph after a big rain, and this kind of aligns with my understanding of how salmon run, receiving a signal of the rain entering the ocean that tells them it's time to move up. Which brings us to one of the issues with the technology. Like Dave showed us some pictures of the Eel River, hundreds of meters wide. It's running incredibly muddy at that time, and the camera can't pick up the entire channel at that time. So that could be a problem, but we try to get around that a little bit by going out at an alternate site and recording just a portion of the channel for a few hours at a time, and every time we did that during these hydrograph peaks, we saw nothing moving. So to me, that kind of suggests that missing that part of the hydrograph isn't a huge deal. So I only got 2 minutes left. Okay, I've got a whole lot more to talk about. I can just leave it there though, if you guys have questions.
So what was your total count for the South Fork?
7,800 total fish. And if you want to put that in perspective, we get around 7,500 on average on the Mad River, 3,000 on average on Redwood Creek in the same kind of time period, if you want to kind of put that in perspective. I also made this little illustration that shows the 2019 count is more or less similar to 1974, so in the grander scheme of things, we're kind of down here, but we still have some fish, and I feel like hope isn't lost. I feel like 4,000 Chinook can make another generation and keep the whole thing going. So, Josh?
Now, you want to talk a little bit about how you decipher Chinook, steelhead, the side that you split out Chinook, just what's your process and maybe data too?
Yep, I made a slide about that, but we didn't get to it.
Well, come on, show us.
I just think it's important for everyone to watch
out. And pike minnow.
Right. So, yeah.
Stripers apparently.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about the advantages and disadvantages. The advantages are you've got very few other options for a river this size. We can't put a weir in there. We can't survey the Eel River when it's muddy for 3 months at a time. We just can't tell what's going on out there. And as Dave said, all we can get on the camera is basically a fish length. So we can't tell exactly what species is out there. So we kind of need to have some observations, model the run, and then use that information to make a best guess and assign, okay, this fish on this day was a Chinook. This day on this day, this fish on another day was a steelhead. What they do in Alaska, where this is a big, big technology used for commercial fisheries, is fish wheels. That's their most common thing. And they'll collect, you know, 100 fish a day, say, you know, this many are sockeye, this many are fed. So we're trying to use the same, a similar kind of method, but the information feeding it comes from South Fork Eel spawning surveys, historic data sets from Benbow or maybe Van Arsdale. And what I have used is multiple logistic regression. And this is actually really similar to the method that they use to assign reds. When they're doing red surveys, they have to say, we think a Chinook made this red, and it's based on the size of the red and the date. Well, I'm using the same basic technique, but I'm using the size of the fish image and the date of the fish image. And the statistical process, if I have a really big fish early on, it classifies it as a Chinook with a high degree of confidence. Likewise, if I have a fish in April, it classifies that as a steelhead with high degree of confidence. And then there's the coho uncertainty. And I was going to try to lead into the next talk by saying that the information from those spawner surveys is kind of key to inform less so the Chinook and steelhead portions, but that middle part where there's coho, that's kind of the only thing that I have to go on. And basically what tends to happen is the population estimate from those spawning surveys gets separated out in the middle, and then I've got a Chinook and steelhead run that are discrete times. So, does that help?
I think it's really good. I really appreciate the work you guys have done this year, and I know we've had a lot of conversations about this, but I think just, you know, from a Potter Valley perspective, this is trying to piece the story together on the eel and get this upper main scent picture sort of. We've got Van Arsdale, we've got Tom Kai. South Fork helps, and obviously there's some chatter about Van Dusen, but this really helps, I think, a lot of us try to tell the story of what's going on out there.
Well, I find it
multiple years, it's only going to get better.
Yeah, I find it fascinating. I think one thing that I throw out on that note is that the run of Chinook was pretty similar, but your watershed's 3 times bigger.
Yeah.
So, what does that mean? You know.
We did try.
We won.
It was a competition.
We did try a seining operation as far as trying to get the species apportionment. You're so limited within these watersheds because of how much flow there is. But we did take a boat seine out there. It was a 400-foot seine in the pool just above our Ditson. And this was in early December. And we only captured basically half-pounders, suckers, and pike minnow. But what it did show was that all these fish were under 39 centimeters, which was with the range of the camera that we were considering the salmonid. So at least in that way, we're most likely counting salmonids. But next year, we hope to sing much more frequently to help the species apportionment.
Are you subtracting out fish moving downstream or things that look like fish moving downstream?
Yep. And that brings us into another, if you want to talk about it later, we can talk about downrunners. Because that's the other confounding factor. what's a milling fish and what's one that went all the way up, spawned, and back down.
One last thing. I didn't get to do any of the field work, but I want to acknowledge the crews that worked.
I'm sorry.
Literally around the clock, 24/7. Corey Roberts is in the back. Thank you so much, Corey. Wow. Middle of the night when the clothes are coming up. It's a hard time.